Let me tell you a little bit about Anne, and then we're going to jump in and chat. Anne Newkirk-Niven, well, she's the editor and publisher of three magazines, Sage Woman, Witches and Pagans, and Crone. She's been active in the goddess and pagan communities for over 25 years, and she lives with her family in the suburbs of Portland, Oregon. And we've just been talking about Portland got some snow today. So welcome, Anne, to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, let's start with you wearing your hat as editor of Sage Woman. How did that come to be, and was Sage Woman your first magazine?
Well, Sage Woman, it was my first project as a magazine publisher, but I'm not actually the first editor or even the first publisher of Sage Woman. Sage Woman started 25 years ago, right here in the Portland metro area. A woman named Carol Shebear started it as a successor to the previous country, Back to the Land women's magazine. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. It's not coming to me. I feel like an idiot. Oh, well, I'll come back to that. Anyway, there was a previous magazine, Woman Spirit, I believe was the name of it. And that was published for a while, and then it stopped publication, and Carol kind of picked up the mantle, and she published the first four issues of Sage Woman, and then she handed it off to Linnea Weatherstone, who was a Santa Cruz goddess priestess, and published the next, well, let's see, she's published issues number 5 through issue number 23. And then it came to me. My first connection with Sage Woman was actually as the printer. I was working in a small print shop run by myself and my husband in Point Arena, and I picked up a copy of Sage Woman in a women's bookstore in Santa Rosa, California, and we were looking for clients that were compatible with our belief systems and also that would appreciate the fact that we were doing all recycled paper at the time and soybean inks. And so I picked up the phone and called Linnea and asked her if we could print Sage Woman. And then and she said yes, and it was just so wonderful. So we worked with her for a while, and then after a time Sage Woman was having some challenges as a publisher, and I ended up acquiring it basically.
You had some firsthand knowledge as the printer. The printer turned editor.
That is correct. The first few years I was doing the magazine as publisher, Linnea was working for me, and then after a while that fell apart, and she went her own way, and I then hired somebody to be the editor and then ran out of money to pay her, so I took it over actually myself as sort of a, you know, it was sort of like that or it was going to die, and I didn't want Sage Woman to die, so I took on the job. And I had really no confidence at all that I could do it, but it was one of those things that you do if you have to.
And well, you know, you remind me of so many of us who feel called to do something, and we might not quite have all the training to do it, but we sort of jump in, sort of like the fool of the tarot deck, you know, and
mm-hmm.
we sort of get on the job training, you know, pretty quick.
Oh yeah, I think that definitely fits.
So I would imagine, but you had a goddess or a pagan background though, or I assume or no.
Well, actually, that's an interesting story. I grew up in a Christian home. I was a very devout Christian of a what would now be considered somewhat traditional, but back then was fairly. We were liberal socially, but we were very devout, and we were Methodists. And my first experience with moving outside of that usual realm was when I got tossed out of my Sunday school class. I was in the third grade for questioning theology, which was a little strange, but we changed churches at that point. And so I grew up being groomed for a position as a minister in that denomination. So I went to Lewis and Clark. I got a religious studies major. I spent a summer in Estes Park, Colorado, as a Christian minister in the national parks. And then I went to seminary. And it was actually while I was at seminary that I found a goddess.
Wow,
that may seem.
That's incredible. So yeah. how does that happen? How do you go to Christian ministry to become a Christian minister and find goddess?
Well, I think that I had been kind of like many people say that are adult converts rather than raised pagan. I think I'd been a pagan in my heart for a really long time. It's just that language was not really available to us back in the 80s so much. It wasn't, people just didn't know about such things, at least not in a very open way. So I had always been very nature-oriented. I had always been very called to more sensory styles of worship. And I considered Catholicism for a while, but couldn't really handle the patriarchy part of it. You know, I really was called to Mary, but didn't feel like I could really put up with the Pope, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so one day, I think it was my first year, I sat down and read that gateway novel, The Mists of Avalon, which so many of us from this generation found as a method of finding the goddess. And then I was really enchanted and went, oh, wow, that's so wonderful. Wouldn't it be great to be able to be a priestess like that? And then happened to be working in the Graduate Theological Union Library in the New Religious Studies Department and found a copy of Starhawk's book, The Spiral Path, and found out that, yes, in fact, it was possible to believe in the goddess, that there was actually a living religion. And that was a revelation. And for a long time, I considered the possibility of trying to live between those two worlds. In fact, I finished my degree at the seminary and came out of the broom closet to my master's degree committee, which I did not know how that was going to go. I was really concerned, in fact, that I might be kicked out of the program and not finish my degree, and they were very open-minded and and gave me my Master of Divinity, which has always seemed to me like a silly title because I always have this image of a dominatrix with a bunch of gods carrying. but in any case,
say about that, though?
Well, my parents were not really happy. That's another place in which it's funny because I'm a very out pagan now. I mean, I use my real name. My home address is printed in every magazine. That's a requirement of the USPS. I wouldn't do that if I didn't have to. And so a lot of people think, oh, well, that wasn't hard to do that. But at the time that I let people know that I had found the goddess, it was really a step off of the high board, you know, off the deep end, because I gave up what I thought was going to be, which I've been preparing for many, many years, my profession. My family was very devout, so they didn't, you know, it's funny, they didn't take it all that well, but they didn't disown me, and that was great blessing. That was a great blessing.
What I'm curious about is, because these are the kinds of questions I like to delve into if you're comfortable with it.
Sure.
Here you were going to seminary to be a minister, but your heart is really, you know, a pagan / goddess heart. How does someone that's seriously considering making such a commitment, you know, meaning going to seminary, especially a woman, I want to try to understand how does one reconcile the you know, the patriarchal aspect of it. You know, how does, mm-hmm. you know, how does one, I guess, tolerate, for lack of a better word, the double standard of, you know, how the church sees women versus sees men? Did that give you pause, or was that difficult for you to swallow? Or maybe in your denomination of Christianity, it wasn't so sexist. I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, you know, this was the 80s, the early 80s. This was in Berkeley, California. So I was attending what was probably the most liberal seminary in the entire United States and
okay.
possibly the world. I'm not really sure. So the seminary was already very, they were very connected to the concept of overcoming racism, patriarchal sexism, and all those kind of oppressive things. I mean, it was a school where I got in trouble, actually, for questioning the inclusive language policy, because in the school at the time, I don't know if it's still like this, although I suspect it is, you weren't even allowed to use male gender terms for God. All the terms that had to be used in public worship were all completely inclusive of gender. And so, and I only questioned it because I didn't understand how that was supposed to work. But I got hauled up in front of an ethics professor and get yelled at pretty thoroughly about it, because I kind of, you know, stepped outside what were the bounds of what was correct at that location. As far as the deeper issue, I would say that the main reason that I left Christianity was simply because the goddess called my heart. In terms, it was not an intellectual decision, it was an emotional one. And I just couldn't find her where I was, which is curious because I'm polytheist. I believe in many gods and goddesses. And as a matter of fact, the only God, male energy that I've ever worked with any success is Jesus. So I don't talk to him very often, but I still consider that spirit to be part of my path, which makes me a bit of a heretic in the pagan community too. But what I found, I guess, is a more, my religion has always been very personal. I always feel very connected to deity. And so the trappings of the church did irk me very much, particularly the kind of language that's used in scripture. The particular denomination that I was a part of had women female ministers for many, many decades, and was trying really hard to be not patriarchal. But of course, the stories, however you wish to interpret them, were not contemporary. And so that was a challenge. I finally just left the church because my heart wasn't there anymore.
So did you find
that's just an emotional thing, I guess, more than anything else.
Well, so did you find that that time you spent there, did that serve you in any way in your next career as a goddess pagan publisher?
Well, actually, the curious thing is I would have to say yes, not because of so much of, you know, the ministry program at that particular seminary, and probably most seminaries, in fact, was very skills-oriented, more than theology-oriented. Now, my Greek exegesis skills I haven't used in 25 years, and they're kind of useless to me at this point, but the skills that I learned in things like public speaking, in small group, you know, leading small groups, pastoral counseling, even though I don't act really as, you know, I'm not an active priestess. I was consecrated as a priestess of the God and Goddess shortly after I left seminary by the Fellowship of the Spiral Path, which is a group many people know Diana Paxson is involved with. So that was something I thought I was going to do. When I left seminary, I felt I was still going to be a minister. I just felt I was going to be a goddess minister. But what ended up happening was I ended up moving to a very remote place in Point Arena, which is you know, about 50 miles from the nearest big supermarket and 100 miles from the nearest big city and, you know, almost a whole day drive to San Francisco. So what ended up happening was, instead of having this big public thing, ministry happening, I ended up in a situation where my gifts went into a literary form, which turned out to really work for me because, among other things, I ended up having kids and not being able to be out in the world. So I was, you know, I've sort of been in this, you know, grass-covered tower or ivy-covered tower of a magazine kind of thing as a way of serving the community. And so I kind of feel that the skills I learned in seminary were useful, even though I switched religions.
I see. Well, that makes total sense.
Now I understand that there are real theological differences, and I totally grasp that. But people are people, and religious
Look, and there's what the church says versus what the everyday person believes and says and practices, you know. So, and lots of times they're worlds apart. So, personally, I'm very eclectic, and, you know, I can totally get that. So then how many years now have you been doing Sage Woman?
I've been doing Sage Woman since 1989, I believe it is. I'd have to actually look it up because I know how old Sage Woman is. I just haven't quite figured out. I've been the editor since issue number 25, and we just put out issue number 82.
Wow.
So it's been, you know, 20-plus years, something in that realm.
So in that
a long time.
so in that long time, Anne, what do you think have been the biggest changes you've seen in the community?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I'm glad you asked it. It's Sage Woman is about community, and so are the other magazines to some extent, but lesser. So Sage Woman is probably kind of the core thing that I connect to and am trying to create a sense of goddess community. Several things have changed. One of them, I would say, is that people are much more aware of just the concept of goddess or concepts of there being different ways of doing religion. When I was coming up, nobody said they were a witch unless they were really radical. There certainly were our foremothers, people like Zee Budapest, people like Starhawk, who were way out there and in the forefront. But nowadays, it's not that uncommon to meet mm-hmm. people who will say they're Wiccan or say they're witches or say they believe in the goddess. So that's one of the biggest changes, is that the goddess community and the pagan community, even if individuals are still constrained by circumstance about sharing their beliefs, the community as a whole is much more public. It's just a huge difference than when I came up. That's one thing. Another thing I think is that there is, what I see myself is that there's less of a separatist attitude than there was. I think that that's generational. Women who are a little older than me, I'm 53, came from a time when the institutional sexism of our society was much more blatant, and they were fighting it in a really vigorous way. And as a result, a lot of the early Sage Womans are pretty separatist. I mean, we still have a policy where we publish only the work of women. I think that's really important to this community. And so I'm cool with that, totally. But it was more sharp, more sharp-edged. I'll give you a concrete example. When about 3 or 4 years after I started being the editor of Sage Woman, I had a really rough year. And I'm a chronic sufferer of both clinical major depression and also panic disorder. And so sometimes I have breakthroughs or breakdowns, whatever you want to call it. And I got into a really dark period. And at the time, I turned to an animal-type spirit, a unicorn, that I had connected to when I was a child and suffered some pretty severe abuse. And then it was, I came to the realization that this particular being was actually a manifestation of the Christ spirit. And then I wrote about it in my editorial, which was a little naive, I realize now. And it was hugely controversial. I got a lot of people who were very, very angry and upset that I had even mentioned that name in Sage Woman's pages. They were really, really
extreme.
It was, oh, the one that sticks out to me the most was a letter I received that said, "Thank you for poisoning the sacred well."
Oh, wow. That's extreme. That's really extreme.
That one went pretty deep.
And
what I have seen over time is, although there is still a great deal of anger about the patriarchy and about the way that the Abrahamic faiths feed into and create, and, you know, especially with the dominationists, the political right-wing Christians that are showing up nowadays,
mm-hmm.
there's still a lot of anger about them, but there's less of an anti-Christian bias.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, there's more of a welcoming and an understanding, I believe, in the goddess community that men are not the sole creators of the problem. Here's another example. Fast forward 20 years from the last story. I got it in my head. I just channel the themes. I just announce a theme, and I don't know where it comes from. Really, I don't. I have to be careful, though, because I always live them out. So the death and dying issue just about killed me. So in any case, I came up with a theme last spring and put it out, because I'm now on Facebook, put it out to my Facebook readers, gingerly thinking that there might be a real backlash at even suggesting this. And the theme I suggested was to have an issue of Sage Woman called Women and Men, in which we discussed sort of the male-female dynamic. And I was very shocked and surprised that the response was 100% positive. People just jumped up, and women just jumped up and down and said, "Please have this theme." Now, I haven't done the theme yet, so I have no idea how it's going to turn out and whether it will be controversial or whether it will be really beloved or whatever. But that's a huge change, I think.
Okay.
That would not have happened 20 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe it's because gender's gotten more fluid.
Well, and maybe also, too, because, you know, there are more people talking about balance, you know, the sacred masculine and divine mm-hmm. feminine. That has something to do with it. You know, they realize that there has to be a balance, and just swinging the pendulum the other way, you know, just perpetuates the same problem.
I don't know. It could be that. I do think that gender politics have changed a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the hot button in the goddess community has to do with transgender. You may or may not know about the big hoorah at PantheaCon last year.
Oh yeah, I heard.
Yeah. So we haven't actually taken on that particular issue in the magazine yet. But I think that it's just not quite as black and white as it used to be, I think.
Right,
and
right.
So that to me, from my personal point of view, I appreciate that, because I love Sage Woman. It's a very important part of my life, and I'm very happy that it is woman only, especially
mm-hmm.
since I have three sons and a husband.
Yeah, you need a little bit of that female energy.
Oh, I sure do.
So, Anne, we probably, we've already, believe it or not, talked like about 25 minutes. The time goes by so fast. So we probably have, I assume, maybe 10, 15 minutes before my second guest calls. So I just wanted to give you sort of a time check there, because I know
no
we
problem.
Want to talk
yeah.
about some other stuff. Tell me, you know, briefly about the other two magazines.
Sure. Witches and Pagans is the outgrowth of a long series of magazines, which we finally think we've nailed down. The first one was Green Man. We were trying to make a male counterpart to Sage Woman, thinking that, you know, since we had, you know, my husband involved in, you know, all these male children, that we needed to do that. That hound would not hunt, as they say. So it morphed into a magazine called Pangaea, and then we had a magazine called New Witch, which we wanted to do for next generation pagans. And eventually we came to the conclusion that what had happened was is that, A, we had too many magazines and we couldn't really handle them all, and, B, that we were bifurcating the community between younger and older pagans. So we merged them together, which was wonderful. Witches and Pagans is, we're trying to be something of a pagan journal of record, something that covers the entirety of the community. And it's not so much on-the-minute news, but sort of deeper issues. We just, for example, did an issue of, on Law and Chaos. Turned out just to be about all about law, really. And it was had articles about the work of pagan civil rights. Was a very large part of that particular issue. And the one we're just about to publish happens to be all about heathenism and northern traditions. That's the first time we've done a tradition-centric magazine. So mm-hmm. it's more journalistic.
Okay.
And has a lot of people in it. Crone is our third magazine. We picked up Crone. A good friend of mine, Ann Kralkamp, published a magazine called Crone Chronicles in the 80s and early 90s. She closed it in 2000. At the time, I was too young to pick up that mantle, and so it lay dormant for about a decade. And then a couple of years ago, I approached her and said, I think it's time for us to bring, you know, a new magazine for the Crone consciousness. And she worked on the first couple of issues with me, and now I'm the editor of that title as well, because she's moved on to other projects. So Crone is... Go ahead.
So, well, I was about to say, so with the, I'm curious if you're feeling any pressure with the closing, you know, of some of the big chain bookstores. Are you feeling any pressure to take your magazines and have them be strictly online?
Well, yes and no. What I would like to say about that is that we are very committed to paper, and our readers have made it extremely obvious to us that they do not want us to go all digital. The magazines have been available digitally as PDF downloads. You can buy them from our site and read them on pretty much any of those devices that people have these days. We have most of them ourselves because we have to, you know, play test them. So you can read them on an iPad or read them on a Kindle Fire and so forth. But our readers seem to really value ink on paper and have told us so on numerous occasions, and I would say that approximately 95% of our readers are still subscribing or buying in the bookstores on paper, and I don't know when, if ever, that will change. I'm not sure. There seems to be something about holding it in your hand. People tell me this over and over again, that they value that.
Well, you know, I, for one, love to soak in a hot tub and a bubble bath mm-hmm. with a book or a magazine, and I don't think I'd do that with a Kindle. There's
well,
something about turning the page,
that.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. There's also something, I mean, we do make it available digitally because people ask us to. If it was just up to me, we wouldn't, because
yeah.
I don't like to read things that way. But people came to us and they said, you know, I would really like to be able to read this. So we're doing it. But what we've seen is that people seem to still enjoy this other method. Now, I expect in the next, I'm going to say, 10 years, that we will see more of our readers being digital readers. But we have every intention of keeping ourselves available in print. And I think that there's also, that's something that we're really committed to for another reason, and that is, that I see, and I've seen other people have agreed with me on this, that there is a real class problem with digital media in that you have to have the device, which is a real barrier to some people. It's a barrier financially. It can be mm-hmm. a barrier. I mean, some people are just not are not there and don't want to be there. And
right,
people
right.
would want to be there but can't afford to be there. And
no,
you
I understand.
Pick up a magazine, and it's not a $200 investment.
Right. So if when the chains started to shut down, did that force you to go to primarily subscriptions? Because I would imagine that must have hurt your business, not having as many shelves to have the magazines on.
Well, it definitely was a huge blow. Last September, we actually started a Borders Rebound campaign because Borders was the one that shut down. We are still in Barnes & Noble. And we're still in Whole Foods and, you know, a lot of independent stores. So we still have, you know, really solid circulation in the stores, but there are a lot less of them now. So we put out to our readers that we really needed to get some money together because these checks that we had depended on from the bookstores were not going to come. And that put us in a big cash flow crunch. And our readers responded. Over 300 Sage Women readers donated. And we raised our $12,000 goal and far surpassed it, as a matter of fact. And so that was a huge psychological lift. Because to tell you the honest truth, I was thinking about, you know, polishing up my resume, which would have been hard to polish, but you never know what you can do, you know, if you have to. But I really didn't want to stop doing Sage Woman. I really didn't.
Well, and it must have been a boon to your heart, too, to see that.
It was. And the letters, yes, it was a balm. I mean, it was really wonderful. And it's happened once before. In 1998, one of our major distributors went bankrupt, and we had to resort to fundraising at that time. And so it's obvious to me that that our readers value what we're doing. And that's kind of where the pedal meets the metal. I mean, we've taken 65% pay cuts since the recession to keep the magazine going.
So, which, Anne, you know, besides Circle News, are there any other, I'm going to use the word major, and I don't know if that's the correct word, but, you know, widely circulated pagan goddess-oriented magazines out there anymore that are, you know, that are in the bookstores, you know, not just an online thing?
As far as I know, no. As a matter of fact, I have seen dozens of pagan magazines come and go.
Yeah, because Green Egg is online now, right?
We can say that Green Egg is online. It is not the magazine that it was, although they're working very hard, and I appreciate their efforts. But that had a hiatus of, I think, a whole decade, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But Green Egg is online. The Beltane papers went down this year, or last year. Goddess Scene is gone. Goddess Pages went online only, used to be in paper, and there's one other magazine in the UK. There are a couple of paper magazines in the United Kingdom that seem to be doing fine. There's a magazine called Pagan Dawn, which is put out by the Pagan Federation, and there's another one called Pentacle. So the UK still has two major papers, and I believe there's at least one and possibly two in Australia. But as far as I know, in the United States, it's Circle and us.
So besides your tenacity and your savvy as a businesswoman, are there any other secrets that you think contribute to Sage Woman being around so long since you took it over?
I would say, in terms of Sage Woman, and I think it's probably best to just focus on that because the other ones have morphed a lot, I think it's Sage Woman herself. I do not take credit for it. Sage Woman has a very specific voice and a very specific feel that I did not invent. And I have to say that although Carol Shebear started the idea based sort of on woman spirit, I would say that it's Linnea Weatherstone who created the Sage Woman that we know and love today. Sage Woman is a place of hope and healing in a rough world, and it has a very specific kind of tone that I think people find immensely valuable. And I think that's the reason we're still here, really. I don't think it's me. I don't think it's my business acumen. I do work really hard, and I've, you know, but a lot of other people have too. I think it's Sage Woman herself.
And so for someone who maybe hasn't found you, a new listener, for instance, mm-hmm. because I do have new people to the goddess, mm-hmm. You know, how you sort of described how it's different, but is there anything else you can put your finger on that, you know, that sort of maybe better describes the tone?
Sure.
Or what is it not?
Well, first of all, Sage Woman is written first person.
Okay.
We don't do a lot of journalistic stories. It's all women telling their stories. Sage Woman is a women's circle in print.
Okay.
And that is an evergreen concept and something that we all need, whether we are gay or straight or transgender or whatever in terms of our orientation. All of us who identify as female, because that's what Sage Woman's about, need to connect. And Sage Woman provides a way of connecting, even though it's, you know, it's not very often. It's 2, 3, 4 times a year, hopefully 4 times this year. But it's very carefully put together. The illustrations are drawn specifically for the articles. They're all commissioned artwork. It's a way of us sharing our stories in print and feeling that we're a member of a community that cares about the goddess, about the earth, about each other, about ourselves. And to be perfectly candid, I have never seen anything like it anywhere. And that was what attracted me all those years ago in that bookstore to say I wanted to be connected with this magazine and to pick up the phone and call Linnea.
Okay.
And what's special.
So in all of these years, is there one particular issue or, I don't know, situation, story that stands out for you?
Oh, my goodness. Probably hundreds. It's kind of like asking a mom which kid she likes best. there's a story that I published in the current issue that I didn't have to do a thing to. I'm a pretty vigorous editor, and this was so amazingly well written that I don't think I changed a comma. It was absolutely the perfect Sage Woman story. And it's interesting because the woman is obviously a goddess worshiper, but it is a story about connecting to self and to nature. It's called Beachcombing. It's by, as it so happens, a woman who lives in Oregon named Mary Zelinka. And the illustrations are by Alana Moronic. And it's in the current issue. And it is just the perfect Sage Woman story. So I don't know how to describe that. She talks about driving to the beach for 3 days to be by herself at the ocean. She's had a really rough time in her life. And she goes to the beach every year. This is a true story. All the stories in Sage Woman are true. We don't publish fiction at all because we think it would be confusing to the reader. So this is what she does every year. She goes down to the beach. She rents a little house to be by herself, and she connects with the goddess in the ocean, in the sky, in the sea urchins, in whatever, you know, in the seagulls, in the animals that she sees, and the wind and the waves, and feels that she's healed. She has, you know, she's had serious problems with, I believe, her son, who is very depressed and often on the edge of possible, you know, doing something to himself. There's just, she has really, you know, these hard challenges that we all face these days. This is a tough time.
Yes, yes.
And she finds healing. And so that's an epitome of Sage Woman, is someone
it's
who's
heartfelt.
Actually
it's,
willing
it's
to
heartfelt.
Share that deep.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just
heartfelt
rare.
Sincere.
Yeah.
Well, and I would imagine, you know, with some of the questions I get asked most often is, you know, people that are looking, you know, they want to know, what does it look like to be a goddess woman, to connect with goddess? So I think it always helps people to read other stories, and it sort of gives them a sense of, well, you know, I get that. That, you know, that works for me too.
Yeah. And one thing I think that also is special about Sage for Moon is we try to be very inclusive. With the exception of the rattle where I let people yell at me, but not much at each other, Sage Woman's tone is very welcoming. There's not a lot. I've been criticized over the years that we're not very political, which is true. We're not very political because that's not what I see Sage Woman's job as being. It's not that I'm not political myself. So when you come to those pages, you're going to find stories from people who hopefully it will resonate with you, and you will be able to kind of see how they found a way through, and maybe that will help you find a way through.
Gotcha. Absolutely. Well, Anne, we're about having it's at that time we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay.
I want to thank you for you know, almost an hour tonight telling us about your life's work here, and I want to thank you for being there. Obviously, we have so few goddess magazines now anymore. It's that much more valuable. So, thank you for hanging in there for you know,
welcome.
for all of us everywhere, and on the. I it would be hard for me to think people don't know how to find you, but, you know, let's go ahead and give the website contact information anyway, just in case.
Sure. I would like to do both the website and the phone number, if I may.
Sure.
Some people don't do websites. It's sagewoman.com, which is sagewoman.com. And the phone number is... really easy. It's 888 Sage Woman, but some people use like numbers, so it's 888-724-3966.
Okay. Well, Anne, you know, we have emailed so many times. It's nice to now actually hear your voice.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Well, thank you so much, and stay warm there tonight, and I appreciate your time and the wisdom you shared with my listeners tonight.